and welcome back to the Advisor Pact monthly session. I'm Mark Little. Listen, this program is designed to provide your clients with a level of service that they claim they cannot find anywhere. So this entire program is all about changing your business model and the paradigms of your business in order to provide a level of service that's unique in the financial services industry. We've never had a time such as this where the affluent of around the world are claiming and willing to pay for a level of service that they swear they cannot find at any price. That represents the biggest opportunity ever in the financial services industry. You have millions of multimillionaires out there willing and able to pay high fees to a financial advisor if only they will align their services with what they want and need most. We call this Advisor Pact. And the key to this program and the key to the business model is to shift your paradigm from whatever services you were providing in the past to instead making a pledge to each and every ideal client to that you've got their back, that you will protect them no matter what. And above all, you will not be the individual that they have to fear. And you pledge to pay attention to the financial details of their life in such a way that you have a process to identify and flush out when the substantial situations in their financial life change so that you're on top of the course corrections that are going to be routinely required in order for them to remain on track to what they say they're trying to accomplish financially. As far as coordination, you're going to be the individual that pledges to pull together two primary things, the financial people in every ideal client's life and all the financial products to make sure that everything and every recommendation, every financial person, every financial product is perfectly aligned with the client's overarching financial strategy. And then finally, transparency. I mean, it's just remarkable how in the 30 years that I've been in this business, we've reached a level in our industry where the affluent, even the very affluent, are unclear on what they're paying and who they're paying for their financial products and services. So you pledge to be the solution to that. No ideal client of yours will ever have any question in their head about what they're paying or who they're paying it to. And so you're going to be the solution. You pledge to protect, pay attention, coordinate with full transparency. And that's the Advisor Pact pledge. And believe it or not, that is what clients, affluent clients, multimillionaires claim that they cannot find anywhere at any price. So think about that one for a minute. We're going to invest today focusing on one question that came in. I think, you know, occasionally there's a question that comes in that I think has a substantial implication to the outcome. You know, we're dealing in a business. I know financial advisors get all caught up in the technical, you know, the tactics of what we provide clients. And the advisors in the Advisor Pact monthly program come from all ends of the financial services industry. So, you know, what is it that you think you're actually providing in terms of value to clients? Some of you are financial planners. Others of you are investment planners and deal specifically with the investments and the money management. Others of you are tax professionals. So some of you are estate planning lawyers. We have insurance professionals that are a member of this program. So to step up and be the most trusted advisor who protects the client, pays attention, coordinates with full transparency, this can be at any entry point. Any financial professional could step up and become a client's most trusted advisor and build a business model where you're the most trusted advisor for every client. But the point I'm making is that to make the shift from whatever you're doing now to a radically different model that clients are willing to shell out substantial amounts of fees, much higher than the average in the industry. We're talking about tens of thousands of dollars per year. We have one advisor client who I'll be meeting with face to face this week, who with our system is compensating, has moved their fee to $100,000 per US per client per year, and that's to deliver the advisor packed method. This advisor's already acquired two clients. So how many clients? So whether your compensation is $100,000 or $50,000 or $30,000 per client per year, how many clients would you need to have at that level to make a substantial difference in your business and in your life? So I guess the point that I'm making is there are small levers that move this model. You know, you think about Advisor Pact and what it really takes to please multimillionaires. I'm telling you, there are half a dozen small levers that move big mountains in this methodology that we're talking about. And this subject, that question that came across today, is one of those small levers. So if you focus on what we're going to cover today in terms of the content, you are guaranteeing yourself to increase the value that you're providing to your best clients and, you know, to radically differentiate yourself from every other advisor that they could possibly have as, working with their financial affairs. So this is one of those issues. Here's the question, the way it came in, and I'm going to shift it around pretty quickly to tell you what the big lever is. What's the big issue that we're dealing with here? In reviewing past sessions, you talk about the importance of sitting down with subject matter experts regularly to increase the performance of the team. Could you run through that process again and let me know how to conduct such a review so that the value our clients feels actually increases as a result of the review? My problem is that my subject matter experts are all successful professionals with more experience than me. They're not used to job performance reviews. In other words, the members of your team, often it's not unusual that the members of your team are maybe even more successful than you, at least at the moment, because of the process that we have to recruit subject matter experts onto your team. It presupposes that these subject matter experts are all highly skilled, highly experienced. So regardless of how much time you've invested up to this point working with ideal clients, it doesn't matter how much time you've been working with ideal clients. As a matter of fact, that's the point. You want to fill your team with subject matter experts who already are working with many, many clients who meet your ideal client profile, and they are therefore skilled experts at dealing with these kinds of clients that you're, you know, building your ideal client community with. So that's, first of all, that's not a big surprise that your subject matter experts are all successful and more experienced than you, at least as when it comes to, you know, providing value to people who meet your ideal client profile. Why? Because that's how you recruited them. You looked specifically for subject matter experts who were already doing that. And I guess just to kind of bring this some context for those of you that are brand new to the Advisor Pact monthly program, you receive a monthly project every single month. So you know every one of you listening to this is, you're running your own race. You're at a different stage in the process. Some of you very well know what I'm talking about. We're talking about building a team of skilled subject matter experts to deliver truly comprehensive financial services to your team. Others of you who are new to the system are still working on many of the preliminary steps in putting your business together. And so you haven't really gotten into to this part of it yet. You're maybe not just even vaguely aware of the fact that we're going to be building a team of subject matter experts. So just for context, let me back up and say that what we're doing, one of the premises, you know, we talk about small levers that move big objects. One of the small levers is the premise that that this community of ideal clients that you're building prefers to get their advice from experts. Now, you're going to be the expert that pulls together all the experts in their life. But when I say expert, I'm talking about subject matter experts. You know, affluent people want to deal with experts. They, you know, they're sick of the financial services industry being a big sales pitch. And they're used to financial advisors just kind of putting the pitch on them in terms of financial products and services and how wonderful they are. So what it is that clients value most is it's a team. And that's one of the things that's going to radically differentiate you in our model. So what's a team of subject matter experts? Well, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but it's basically our system shows you specifically how to acquire five subject matter experts: a financial planning subject matter expert, a money management subject matter expert, a tax subject matter expert, an estate planning subject matter expert, and then finally, an insurance subject matter expert. So those are the five primary areas of personal finance that your team will consist of. An expert in each of the five major areas of personal finance: financial planning, money management, tax, estate planning, and insurance. So with that team in place, this question has to do with after you've built your team. So, you know, it's a huge accomplishment to build a team. The fact that you've got a team of five highly skilled subject matter experts in all the areas of personal finance, I mean, that's a huge victory. As a matter of fact, you can pause for a moment once your team is built and, you know, just toast your success, because very few financial advisors have a skilled, arm's length, disinterested, conflict-free team. In other words, not a team put together with the expectation of referral business back and forth, and therefore, you know, it's all, it's all in the expectation of generating, you know, billable hours or financial products and service, you know, either commissions or fees. You know, it's a team that's specifically pulled together on a fee basis to provide a level of service to clients that around which the compensation to the team is completely disconnected from any financial product or service compensation. Okay, so it's conflict free. This radically differentiates you, and it deserves, you know, high praise. But now that the team is in place, that's where this question comes in. Okay, so great, I've got a team. There are certain things about every team that are true. Most of these teams don't really know how to serve in a team environment. Yes, they're highly successful. Yes, they've dealt with individuals that meet your ideal client profile. No question about any of that. But they are focused on their narrow field of finance. Let's just presume and admit up front, they're really, really good at what they do. What they haven't done is work together. So the idea of working with other complementary professionals, understanding how and when to, you know, have the pertinent discussions that will add value to the client relationship, you know, how to actually interact with the others, how often, on what topics, and, you know, are they capable of playing nice in the sandbox? Are they the type of people that work well with others? You know, these are all things that you really don't know until you pull the team together. In addition to that, how well integrated are they as a team? In other words, can they, they're clearly good at their narrow field of finance in their narrow niche. But, you know, if let's say we pulled them together as a team and said, hey, the five of you, you know, you've got 90 days to pull together a comprehensive written financial plan or financial strategy for a new ideal client. You know, if you just kind of set them off at their own devices, could they pull it together as a team and produce a product at the end of that 90 days that was extraordinary? And so these are all things that typically require development. These are things that typically do not come naturally to the team, and some are better than others. So you'll find very quickly that some on your team have natural leadership skills. I kind of laugh at that term because leadership is clearly a skill that's developed, but some have developed that leadership skill and seem, you know, that without, I say, natural born leadership skills, they've already developed leadership skills that are obvious. Others struggle, you know, some others are going to have, you know, issues of one variety or another in interacting with the team and pulling the team together to operate as a functional unit. Okay. So the question here is, can I run through the process of, once you've got the team in place, how do you sit down and review the team so that they actually improve? And not just improve from internal measures, but they improve in the eyes of the client, which is all we really care about. We want to make sure that the value to the client is increasing. You know, we have a couple of specific measurables with clients that we know truly matter. The key among them is the indispensability rating. And this is one of the things that we have you do from the very beginning, that on a regular basis, at least once every 4 months, you assess and ask each client, you know, if they view your team as indispensable. And your goal is to have every ideal client, you know, look you in the eye and say, your team is indispensable to me. You know, until you, it's very binary. Until you have a client that looks you in the eye and says you're indispensable, indispensable is a very emotionally charged word. People don't tend to use it unless they are, it's way beyond loyalty and the fact that they would stay with you or remain with you in good times and bad for them, you know, but also, but indispensability actually implies the opposite, which is a level of fear of losing you. So we know from working with large number of clients, we've got data on this, so we can tell you with authority that the higher the percentage of client of ideal clients that look you in the eye and say you're indispensable, and they will rate you and use that word indispensable when it relates to you and your team, then those are the clients that are willing to not only pay the most, but you can measure their satisfaction of what you're doing for them by the referrals and introductions that they provide you. And that is the key measure. If your team's so great, then, you know, then the clients will be introducing you to everyone that they know and love and care about. It's natural. Now, I'm not saying that every client refers actively. I'm not saying that every client, you know, is the mother load of referral, you know, introductions. That's not the case. What I'm talking about is the overall referral rate of your entire community of clients. It's a question of, you know, if an ideal client claims you're indispensable, then, you know, they're going to bring your name up whenever it's appropriate. It may be once a year if they have an adult child, or if they have a relative or a friend or a neighbor or an associate or, you know, a colleague who has, you know, something in their life, some issue, financial issue comes up in just regular conversation, and it's either an issue of, it's either an opportunity, a financial opportunity in their life, or something that is a financial problem or issue in their life that they're dealing with. Whenever topics of money come up, the question on the table is yours the first name that comes to mind with your clients? And if they view you as indispensable, then without question, they will not allow anyone they know or love or care about to talk to anybody other than you and your team. So that means that it becomes critical to work with your team to and these reviews, you're calling it a performance review, a job performance review. I'm going to give you alternate way to look at this. But in essence, what I think you need to take away from this whole conversation is it's a small lever that moves a big object. And the big object is this. It's if you can get your team in place and then review them over time so that they are performing at the highest levels in the client's mind, enough to impress the client and have the client view your team as indispensable, then that brings us right to the advisor pack guarantee. That's the big payoff. That's what we're talking about here. It's critical that you get your team up and running initially, and then after that, how fast can they get to a level that impresses the clients? Because the clients will introduce you to others that they care about if they view you as indispensable. So if you implement the Advisor Pact method, the business model that we teach in this program, but not to your satisfaction, to your ideal client's standards. So that is the big shift in our system. We focus 100% of the time on, you know, we set up the entire system to deliver at the client standards. We've been studying the client standards for 20 years. And so then we give you a method of measuring your own client's satisfaction and indispensability rating so that you know your own your own percentage of clients that view you as indispensable. So if you implement our methodology to your client's standards, then your existing clients will completely take over the business marketing functions for you. In other words, adding ideal clients. If you do this right and you implement this method to your client's standards, your calendar is going to be filled, and this is the data we have across all of our members, your calendar will be filled with a minimum of five initial client interviews with new potential clients every single week that are introduced to you by your existing well-served clients, okay? So the whole point of this reviewing of subject matter experts is to get them up to a standard where you will enjoy a regular stream of new potential clients that are coming in as a result of your subject matter experts serving your ideal clients at the highest levels. So let's talk about terminology for a minute. I want to encourage you never to use the word job performance review or performance review. I think the way to think of this is this sitting down with subject matter experts to talk about how to increase the value to clients. We call this and encourage you to call this the subject matter expert expectations conversation. So the purpose of the meeting is to share and review expectations from both parties. The reason that this terminology works is because it's not just your expectations on them. It's a meeting that implies that you're interested in their expectations of you as well. Okay? It follows under the premise that for this to be an equitable arrangement, it's got to be fair to both sides. It's got to be fair to both parties. And so, yes, we are going to talk in this meeting about what's expected by you. So, you know, this is an opportunity in this meeting with the subject matter expert one-on-one to share what you expect, no question. But it's also a purpose of the meeting to share what's expected by your subject matter expert in order to meet those expectations. So you've got your expectations, and then they are within their rights in this meeting to turn around and say, okay, well, you know, given that's what you expect, here's what I expect. You know, here's what I need, here's what I expect. So it goes both ways. And this is how you need to, this is the mindset you need to have, and this is the way you sit down with your subject matter expert and propose conducting these meetings, because it's only reasonable for someone on your team to want to sit down regularly and talk about expectations on both sides of the agreement. So you're going to, and in addition to what you expect and what they expect, it's also an opportunity to discuss other items expected if the relationship is to grow and continue to be valuable. So, I might add, these are human relationships. And it's not just you. There are other humans involved besides you and this subject matter expert. There's your administrative support people, specifically your administrative manager. And then they've got administrative support people, or at least we recommend that you only invite or you limit your subject matter experts to only invite subject matter experts that already have a pretty deep administrative support team already in place. This is part of the scalability. But the point is, you've got you to keep happy. You've got your, on both sides, you've got your administrative support staff. You know, there's potential there for issues to come up. In addition to that, you've got clients who, are the goal is for them to be thrilled. But, issues come up, problems occur. Anyway, the point is there are a lot of people to keep happy. So in addition to just simply talking about what's expected on both sides, you've got your staff's issues to deal with and issues come up where your client's concerned. And this is a meeting to hit all these topics. So you need to sit down on a regular basis in order to talk about all these issues. So that's the whole point. This cannot be an expectations conversation that just happens once. In other words, if you sit down and structure a deal with a subject matter expert to serve your clients and to serve on your team of subject matter experts, it's not going to be enough to sit down at the beginning of the relationship and just lay out the expectations and talk back and forth about what each of you expect. No, this has to be conducted regularly. You know, the famous quote that no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. Well, let me just tell you, no agreement with a subject matter expert survives the first client progress meeting. It's true in every subject matter expert arrangement that I've ever set up for our firm. And it's been true in coaching advisors all over the world that you're going to think you have an agreement in place. In other words, you're going to have in your mind what the outcome of having this subject matter expert on board is going to mean to your clients. But then after the meeting, that perception of yours is going to change. Now that you've seen the actual work of the subject matter expert, it's critical that you sit down and meet regularly, because I can promise you that what was actually delivered is going to be different from what you had in mind as far as your outcome in your head. And sometimes it's better, occasionally, but usually there are some areas that you're surprised and need to sit down and kind of renegotiate or discuss some of the expectations to get things more in alignment with what you were expecting way back when you invited this individual on the team. So from experience, we know that you need to sit down at least 3 times a year with every subject matter expert in order to keep this relationship improving and moving in the direction of where you need and want this relationship to be and what you had in mind when you initially set up the agreement. So you need to sit down and meet with every subject matter expert at least once every 4 months. So you're going to sit down and have a subject matter expert expectations conversation when you first bring on a new subject matter expert. We call this the deal structure meeting. It's a one-time meeting, and you're going to sit down and lay out your expectations. They're going to share their expectations, and you're going to document the process. You're going to get it all documented in writing, exactly what's expected on both sides. What I'm saying is then 4 months later in our system, in the 3-meeting process, you're meeting with every client once every 4 months. That means 4 months after this subject matter expert comes on board, you've now met with every ideal client at least once. Now you need to sit down and have the subject matter expert expectations conversation again. And then, after the next meeting cycle, 4 months later, you need to have the SME expectations conversation again. And what I'm saying is, every single time you have a meeting cycle, you must sit down with every SME and compare where the relationship is now, how they're currently performing towards your ideal clients, as compared against what was expected up front. And what was expected up front in our system is that they are going to be adding tremendous value, not in your mind, but in the mind of the client. So it needs to be that every 4 months you're sitting down and talking about how to get what their performance is in alignment with what was expected up front, which is providing extraordinary value to each and every client. And then after the third one, 4 months later, you meet again, and so on and so forth, so that you're meeting every single year at least three times. And so you're sitting down at least once every 4 months. Now, what is this meeting about? What is it that you're supposed to be talking about? Well, the SME expectations conversation has a three-point agenda. The first is to assess, is this SME currently living up to the specific commitments that were agreed upon? Yes or no? It's kind of a pass-fail. But the way I look at it is, you know, part of the agenda has got to be addressing, you know, the reality that they agreed to a certain set of things to deliver upon, certain commitments up front. And that has evolved over time. So the commitments are specific. The question is, are they living up to their commitments? Yes or no? The second agenda item is, what more are they going to be doing to increase the value that ideal clients receive? In other words, our goal is to fulfill what ideal clients value most. And the issue, the reality is, as skilled as the subject matter experts are, they're not used to working as a team. So they may know what they may have a sense, and the reason that you selected them for your team is because they're experienced and skilled at working with people who meet your ideal client profile. But now they're in a team environment. So the question is, bottom line, are we fulfilling what clients truly value most? If so, we will see it show up in the referral percentage, the percentage of referral, the rate of referrals being received. You know, we're not expecting every client to refer, although personally, I think that's a conversation that you should have. Why isn't every client referring? But kind of sticking with this point for a minute, you know, it doesn't matter what the SME thinks is valuable. It doesn't matter what the SME feels that they're providing in terms of services and value for what you're paying. You know, it's not an issue of you're getting what you're paying for. It's an issue of, we're in the business of fulfilling what ideal clients value the most. And so what the question on the table is, what more will this particular subject matter expert be doing to increase the value received by clients and to impress clients? And so third, what will this subject matter expert do personally to increase the percentage of ideal clients who consider our firm to be indispensable? So I mentioned that this is the one rating that we monitor the most closely. So, you know, currently a certain percentage of your ideal clients consider you to be indispensable. The question on the table is, what's this particular subject matter expert going to do so that when you're sitting down 4 months from now again at the next SME expectations conversation, that whatever that percentage is now, what are they going to do so that that percentage has increased, so that we have a higher percentage of ideal clients who consider us indispensable? Okay, so there are two tools that you're going to use to go through these three agenda items, to get what you need and what your clients need from this subject matter expert at the SME expectations conversation. The first tool is called the SME, the subject matter expert commitment assessment form. It's an internal form. It's not something you're ever going to show to your subject matter expert, but it basically establishes whether this subject matter is or is not living up to the specific commitments that were established for them. Okay. And then the second tool is called the subject matter expert key performance measures form. Now, this is the key form because it is shared with the subject matter expert. As a matter of fact, this form comprises the bulk of the meeting. This is what you're going to be going over with them. And it is designed to measure every skill, every quality that's important to the job, but on a scale. So think in terms of on a scale of 1 to 10. So it's designed to measure improvement over time. So this is the key performance measures form, you know, outlines specifically the skills that are required for the job and designed to measure each skill on a scale so that we can see improvement over time. All right. So let's focus on each form. Let's talk about the commitment assessment form. First of all, this form is the one I'm going to show you, and I'm on the replay page for this session. I'll include a download for you so you can look at the form that we use on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. This is our flagship software system that we utilize. You know, that advisors that are members of the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, you know, we've created all these things for them, and we have kind of an integrated software system to deliver comprehensive financial services. But in this program, the Advisor Pack Monthly program, I promised up front to each and every one of you that I will share the resources in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, which you're not a member of, but I will, you know, when it's important and will help you, I will share those resources with you. And I'm going to do that right now. So this form is something that we utilize in the toolkit, and I'm going to provide the sample that we use so that you can then create your own. And the reason I say that is when you actually download and look at the form, there are some apps on the toolkit, software in our system. There's even terminology that may be unfamiliar to you. In other words, it's a system that not all of it's going to make complete sense to you, but when you read through it, I think the main point you need to take away from this commitment assessment form are a couple of critical elements that are tended to be missing before we came along and filled the gap. And that is, most trusted advisors don't have a team. So if they do have a team, it's very loose, and it's more like a referral relationship where you're just referring business back and forth. But very few, I would say it's almost non-existent for a financial advisor to have a team of conflict-free subject matter experts who are basically already being compensated to do a set of services for the client. So, and with no expectation of future business through commissions or fees or by billable hours or anything else. Okay. The second thing is that if there is a team in place, financial advisors tended to not document in writing specifically what was expected up front. In other words, here's the list of things I expect. That typically was not provided. And so we created it. I mean, that's part of our system, and that's what I'm telling you need to have in place is up front at the beginning of the relationship, a list of, you know, here's exactly what I expect from you. And third, a way to measure that over time. So even if there is a contract in place to do specific things, I think the question is the contract and the agreement flexible enough to be able to measure success? And if the client is, if it's not improving value to the client at the client's level expectations, which is measurable by increased referral rates across your entire client community, then is the contract flexible enough to evolve and increase and, you know, change the value being provided to the client to it in order to impress them more, until the client actually states that they're impressed. All right, so let me talk about the form that I'm going to be providing you with the caveat that this is a form for the toolkit and you'll need to create your own. But basically, here are some examples of some of the things that are on our commitment assessment form that I believe need to be on yours. An agreement that the subject matter expert is going to submit all their work through your office, through your administrative manager, and not send things directly to the client. In other words, that's part of being a part of a team that, you know, all work is submitted through, you know, through the team, so the team can review it before the client sees it. And an agreement to provide recommendations in writing. And this would be in advance of the client meetings. So it's an agreement to provide recommendations not only in writing, but to provide all backup analysis that supports the recommendations. In other words, don't just tell me what you're recommending. Show me, either give me a memorandum, kind of giving me the context and the background and the insights on why you came to this recommendation. I need all that backup. Or if it's an actual analysis, like let's say your insurance subject matter expert is doing an analysis on, let's say, the amount of life insurance that a client should have, you need to see all of that, all those projections, all the analysis. You know, here is the math that proves why this level of life insurance is the exact right amount for this client. So you want to see not only the recommendations in writing, but all the backup as well. And it's all submitted prior to every meeting deadline. So you've got to get everything. You're expecting every subject matter expert to submit their recommendations in writing with backup prior to the deadline. And you expect every subject matter expert to agree to utilize the 16 weeks in between meetings to do their work and not wait to the last minute. So in the three-meeting process, for those of you that are new to the system, the three-meeting process simply means that in our system, one of the other small levers that creates a huge foundation for our system is the fact that you're going to meet with every client three times a year. That means once every 4 months, you're going to meet with every client. Well, 4 months, that's 16 weeks. What you're going to get every subject matter expert to agree to before they come on board is to utilize the entire 16 weeks in between meetings and not wait to the last minute. So that rush, you know, the day before the deadline, that's the first time they looked at, you know, what they're supposed to be doing. And now there's a big flurry of activity. Everybody's turning everything in because they waited to the last minute. You know, this is an agreement up front. Nobody on our team waits to the last minute. Everybody utilizes the entire 16 weeks in between meetings to get all their work done. So there's never a rush. And also an agreement to regularly collaborate with the other subject matter experts on the team in between client meetings. So, you know, it's great to have a team, but I can tell you from experience that the real value of having the team is the synergy that's created by their interactions with each other. You know, we see this in hospital dramas on TV and in the movies where, you know, the hero of the movie has some, you know, inoperable or major medical problem, and they're trying to figure out how to save their life. And so they're in the hospital, and out in the hall, you've got a team of three or four doctors who are just rapid fire brainstorming all these creative and unique ways and heroic things that can be done medically to save the individual's life. And so that's the metaphor. It's like doctors huddling in the hall around a patient's challenges. This is what we expect from our team. You know, we don't want any subject matter expert to just be working in isolation with their own team in their office, never talking to anybody else. No, we expect every subject matter expert to collaborate with the other subject matter experts in between every client progress meeting and to submit their notes about those interactions, those collaborations, to our administrative manager within 24 hours. So you meet and collaborate with another subject matter expert. You basically type up those notes. We have a format that we require, and it's another monthly project that you will get somewhere along the way if you haven't already. It's called the interaction log. So the notes that are submitted need to be in the interaction log format. But, you know, not to get ahead of ourselves, the expectation is we expect you to collaborate with the other subject matter experts in between meetings and to submit your notes of those interactions to the administrative manager within 24 hours so that we can circulate those notes to everybody on the team so they understand the issues. How about the agreement to attend every dry run prep meeting? If this is a foreign term to you, I won't go into it other than to say it's another small lever that makes a big difference. It's a brief meeting, 20-minute meeting, a week or 10 days before the actual client meeting. It's an internal meeting only of all your subject matter experts. So this is the expectation that every subject matter expert attends all of these dry run prep meetings. They show up on time, and they come fully prepared. And how about they agree to review the work of all the other subject matter experts prior to every dry run prep meeting. That's also an expectation in our system. That's part of coming prepared to the dry run prep meeting, is that you've taken a minute to review the work submitted by the other subject matter experts so that you can provide oversight and peer review as it relates to your narrow field of finance. So I've provided six expectations here that are on the commitment assessment form. I'll leave it to you to come up with your own expectations to add and change. And, you know, I think the whole point is setting specific expectations that then you can later come back and measure against and say, is this being done currently or not? So that you have something as far as expectations to measure. Now, this is the commitment assessment form that I'm providing you as a download. This is the one that we have on the toolkit. As you can see here, this first thing, you may not be able to read this, but it says, I confirm that I'm highly skilled and experienced in the narrow field of finance listed above, and it's whichever field of finance they are. And your current assessment is they are above, at, or below expectation when it comes to that expectation. In other words, and it gives you a couple of lines to put your thoughts around whatever your rating is of them. And, you know, I understand that I will be asked to review the work within my narrow field and confirm that I am both skilled and experienced enough to judge the work of others within my area of expertise. So then the question is, prior to every time you sit down with the SME, just think, are they performing above, at, or below expectation on that item? So this commitment assessment form, it's a 10-page document, at least on the toolkit, but it's the thing that the SMEs signed off on in advance of coming to work with you. And therefore, since in the model that we teach you, these are the expectations that they sign off on every single paragraph in advance. Therefore, on this form, you just simply go back on each paragraph and assess, currently, are they performing above, at, or below expectation? So the commitment assessment form rates performance of a subject matter expert in three ways. So for each area, you need to think and look at the file, look specifically at what they've done since the last time you sat down with them to have an SME expectations conversation, which should have been within the last 4 months. So what have they done above expectations? What deserves your praise? What have they done below expectations? What has happened in the last 4 months that needs improvement? This, you need to schedule at least an hour of preparation time before the subject matter expert expectations conversation to actually prepare yourself for this conversation. And for each area that you expect, you need to ponder and look at the evidence and find specifics, as many as you can, to support your current rating of above, at, or below your expectations. So in the interest of time, what's the purpose of having this commitment assessment form? It's not something that you're going to ever show to them. So It's really just to help you organize your thoughts. You're going to focus on two areas, above expectations and below expectations. Average is just going to be the normal course of the conversation, the way I'm going to show you how to conduct it in just a moment. But the point is, I just focus in, get your head clear on what they're doing extraordinarily well currently, because you're going to want to praise them for that, and get your mind focused on any performance that is currently below your expectations, because as you go through the next step, you don't want the SME expectations conversation to be your 2 or 3 hour meeting. I mean, your goal is to conduct this entire subject matter expert expectations conversation in an hour or less. To do that, you need to come into the meeting very clear in your head. What are they doing extraordinarily well so you can praise them? And what are they doing below your expectation so you can focus on improvement, and you're prepared with the specifics? But the point of it is, by focusing on these two things, that's how you keep the exercise within the time limit, because everything they're doing average, you're not going to spend a lot of time talking about that. You're going to cover it, and I'll show you how to in a moment, but you're not going to spend a lot of time talking about average performance. That's just, you know, where the routine process is designed to help them make measurable improvement. And you don't need to get a lot of, you know, you don't need to spend a lot of mental energy thinking about average. You need to focus on, you know, what are they doing tremendously well, and say, do more of that. In other words, that's great. That, you know, the client talks to me about you're doing that, or it's obvious that this is something in the meeting. This is something that the clients truly value. I saw the look on their face. I had the conversation with them, so I know what you're doing in that area is something that the clients truly value. And in other areas, you know, if they're late to meetings, or they turn in items, you know, late, or don't meet their deadlines, or they don't respond quickly to the rest of the staff, anything else that you've got specifics on, you know, you need to get those in your head, because, you know, this meeting is the perfect opportunity to, you know, set your expectations on anything that's unacceptable. All right. So let's talk about what kind of skills are on the next tool. So the second tool is the key performance measures form. Again, I'm providing you with a sample that we use from the toolkit. Feel free to use this. It's a Microsoft Word document, so feel free to edit it to your own liking. You'll see when you look at it that it's set up so that in each of the areas of performance for a subject matter expert, we call these the key performance measures. In each of these areas, it gives a scale. I say a scale of 1 to 10, but it's actually a scale of minus 10 to plus 10, with 0 being neutral. And when you look at it, I'll just show it to you in a minute. Let's focus on the skills. So among the skills on the key performance measures form are quality and thoroughness of work, their contributions during the dry run prep meeting. Are they contributing? Are they being a shrinking violet, not saying anything during those meetings? How are they doing when it comes to responding to other members of the team? How quickly are they responding? How proactive are they? How well have they mastered the client's situations, desires, perspectives, aspirations? Basically, how well do they know your clients? Talk about their own process. How effective is their current process? Is it documented? Is it up to date? Are they following it? How well does this subject matter expert collaborate and interact with others on the team? Are they submitting interaction logs regularly? How are they doing when it comes to collaborating with the rest of the team? How about the timeliness of their work product? Are they turning everything in prior to the deadline? How about oversight? Working with the client's other financial people, making sure that they're looking at the entire comprehensive financial life of the client, and to in order to look for things that might be triggered within their narrow field of finance. You know, how are they providing oversight over the entire strategy and with the client's other financial people in their life? So those are the areas of skill that we're measuring. And here's what I'm talking about. I wanted to show you. It may be a little hard for you to see here, but this is page one. It's an 8-page document that you'll be looking at in the download, the one we provide. But it shows, like, here's dry run prep meeting preparedness. It's on a scale from minus 10 to plus 10, with zero being neutral. So down below, it gives some words to kind of give you guidance on selecting your score for this subject matter expert. So a plus 10, you can read all these things, but I'll just give you a little taste of it. So plus 10, it says always comes to meetings fully prepared, action items completed, reports created, analysis thorough, well conceived. And then over on the minus 10, it says never comes to meetings prepared. And then zero says sometimes comes to meetings fully prepared. And then a plus 5 would be usually comes to meetings fully prepared. So if you go through this whole, this puts words to the scale. And so you get to read these words, and then you get to decide on a scale of minus 10 to plus 10, with zero being neutral, where are they currently in terms of their performance in each of these areas? Now, the key to the system is, and the process, the way we recommend that you do this with each subject matter expert one-on-one, is this key performance measures form is updated by each of you or both of you. So this requires that you provide this key performance measures form to your subject matter expert in advance of the meeting. In other words, every 4 months when you conduct this SME expectations conversation, this is provided to your subject matter expert in advance to make sure that they come to the meeting having filled out their scale, their scoring, their rating on each of these areas before they come to the meeting. So here's the process, okay? So the key performance measures form is the primary document that you're going to be using to conduct the SME expectations conversation. And so here's the process. And by the way, just a note, as with all internal and external meetings, you record every meeting. So you need to record this meeting and keep a copy of the recording in the file for this subject matter expert, and you keep them in the archive forever. So you record all of these meetings and you disclose that to them. And I can tell you from experience, sometimes they want a copy of the recording, which is fine. So anyway, both the subject matter expert and the trusted advisor complete the key performance measure form in advance of the meeting. You open the meeting by asking how the subject matter expert feels the relationship is unfolding, how it could improve. Now, you're going to, if they have some routine suggestions, because oftentimes what I've learned in the past is subject matter experts either come to the meeting and everything seems to be functioning reasonably well, and there's really nothing top of the mind that they brought to the meeting to talk about. And so if so, you're not encouraging them to come up with things that they haven't prepared, you know, and you're just seeing, you're fishing, you're trying to see, did they come prepared with some major issue that you're unaware of? And if not, if all they say are some routine suggestions, then this is your chance to practice and practice the skill of, you know, politely acknowledging what they're saying very quickly. You don't want to really shut them off. You want to acknowledge what they're saying. But if they did not come prepared with anything substantive, then your diplomatic skills come into play and you get to practice how do you move this thing on so you can get to the real meat of the meeting, which is going through the key performance measures. Okay. However, sometimes they do bring a major issue, either an issue of disagreement or some sort of a conflict or some problem that they're it could be anything. I've had subject matter experts complain that, you know, we don't have enough complain about our software resources, whatever. Anyway, I want to get this issue off the table. So I'm just saying, at the beginning of the meeting, ask them how they feel the relationship is unfolding. They either don't have anything major, in which case you quickly move on to the key performance measures. they might have come prepared with a major issue that they want to discuss. I'm saying stop right then and deal with it. If it's major enough, if it's a crisis that you're unaware of, then I'm going to say stop with it, stop the meeting, deal with that issue right then and there. And, you know, and if necessary, reschedule the purpose of this meeting, which was the SME expectations conversation. My point is, you want to get their issues off the table so that they're not sitting there stewing and distracted by these issues on their mind before you get to what you're really trying to do, which is kind of go through the process to design to increase value to the clients. All right, so you get the issues onto the table. If it's a minor issue, just acknowledge it. Put it in the parking lot. You know, make a documented note of what the issue is. Ask if you can come back to it. If we haven't dealt with it before the end of the meeting, we'll deal with it at the end. If it's a major issue, stop right then and deal with it. But the point is, you don't want them distracted with any list of issues that or complaints that they've got, because otherwise you won't get done what you really are hoping to get done here, which is an improvement in their value to your clients. So once you're past that and you move on to the key performance measures, you each of you pull out the version that you completed. So you completed a version on them, they completed a version on themselves, and for each of the key performance measures, you share each other's current assessed score. So you go item by item, you stop on each item, and each item is a brief conversation, and you ask them, what did you score yourself in this area? And then you share what your score was. And the whole thrust of this conversation is, and what represents the bulk of the conversation is, it's you facilitating this question. So why do you think there's a difference between our two scores? You know, why did you score yourself an 8 and I scored you a 4? Why do you think, what's your opinion on the difference between our two scores? Why do you think I scored you so much differently than you did? I can tell you occasionally I score them higher than they score themselves, you know. So alternately, why did you score yourself a 4 when I scored you a 6? Why do you think I have more confidence in you in this area than you do? And maybe there's something you're unaware of that happened, and you might be willing to change your score up or down after hearing what they say. So there may be things you're unaware of. It may be that, you know, it's just in your opinion, they're improperly rating themselves higher than they should in that area. I think the point is to have the conversation. They need to understand the whole purpose of the meeting is for you to understand their position on each of these things and to give them a voice, but mainly for them to hear what your expectations are, because you're the one paying the bill. So, trusted advisor, why do you think there's a difference between our scores? And the goal is to get the subject matter to understand your score. The objective is improvement. So what are we trying to do here? Let's say you score them a 6 and they score themselves a 7. So now you go through the whole conversation, why they think they scored a 7 and you scored a 6. You each get a minute or two to talk about, you know, the why behind your score. And either one of you might say something that the other was not aware of. But in the end, it's your score that matters. So what are we trying to do here? Well, if you score them, let's say you settle upon a 6, let's say, because it's your score that's going to matter. At the end of this meeting, whatever you say is the score, that's the score that goes into the file. So let's say the official score is 6. What's the goal? Well, the goal between now and the next 4 months is not necessarily to get from a plus 6 to a plus 10, although that would be extraordinary and good and encouraged. I think the minimum expectation is that between now and the next time we meet, it's going to move up at least 1 point. So the goal in the next 4 months is to make as much progress as possible, with a minimum standard being that when we're sitting here 4 months from now, your score is higher than it is right now. So the question before you move on from each area is for you to ask the subject matter expert, when we're sitting here 4 months from now and your score is higher, what happened? What did you do? What needs to happen for that improvement to occur? Your goal is to document specific actions, specific things they're going to do, because you're not kidding. You expect everything to move up at least 1 point every 4 months. So when you're sitting down every time you have a SME expectations conversation, there's got to be forward movement in each and every area. Otherwise, that stagnation indicates that they've put your relationship on a back burner, and that's not good. That's an issue that needs to be addressed. You know, this whole thing is just designed to flesh out what the real issues are. Get them out on the table so you can address them. And if they are not making forward progress and it's obvious that you've become kind of a back burner for them, well, you get to decide whether that's acceptable to you or not. For me, if I had two meetings where there was not forward progress in an area, I had the shape up or ship out conversation where I just told them, I said, you know, I'm focused on my ideal clients. I've got to make sure that the team is functioning that they're functioning at the highest level they're capable. And I've selected everybody because they're highly capable. So I want the A game. I want everybody performing their best efforts, and I expect nothing less. And if you're telling me I'm the back burner, then you tell me what you're going to do about this, because I'm going to have to start looking for a replacement, you know, at some point. So anyway, and then I immediately tell my administrative manager, we've got to start at least interviewing replacements. But the point is, you know, this key performance measures is designed to flush out all the important issues for conversation. Okay. So continuing with the process, you're going to document everything they say. So they're going to tell you, here's what I'm going to do over the next 4 months for my team to move from a 6 to a 7 or whatever the score is, at least move up one, if not more, before the next time we sit down and have this SME expectations conversation again. And as I keep saying, you're the one who establishes the final score. So I'm not saying that after you hear what they have to say that, that it might not change. The score may or may not change after you have the conversation. I can tell you from experience, sometimes it does. You know, sometimes I've increased my score or decreased my score after the conversation with the subject matter expert. But whether it does or it doesn't, my point is it's your score that is the final score. You're allowed to have the final say because you're paying the freight. You're paying for the team. And so that puts you in that position and gives you that right. Okay. Just to finish out the process, the two bottom line questions after you've gone through every area in the key performance measures, you've followed that formula of the conversation the way we just outlined it in each of the areas, you to kind of wrap up the session. And before you wrap up, make sure you go back to the page that you've documented. We call it the parking lot, where you've noted issues that they brought up as kind of maybe issues that were off track at the moment in the conversation, but you acknowledged the issue that they brought up and you noted it. And so make sure before you leave the meeting that you acknowledge that list of items and ask them, did we cover everything on this list, or do we need to talk about this more, each of these items? I recommend that you keep this meeting to the promised start and end time. So if you promised to end after an hour, then end it at an hour. And if there's more things in the parking lot that need to still be discussed, then just promise to do that. Say, you know, we have some issues here that we're not finished talking about. How about this? Why don't I have my administrative manager connect with you on your way out today? And we'll get on the calendar for a phone call either today or tomorrow to finish this conversation. Point is, you know, make sure that you acknowledge all the issues that were not discussed, but that you documented just in the interest of moving forward with the agenda so you don't get off track. And, you want to try to finish the key performance measures and get through that whole thing in less than an hour. And over time, you know, first time you do it, it might take 2 hours. And that's the point. Over time, every time you do it, you'll get better and you'll be more skilled at managing the time the more you do this. So the two bottom line questions that you need to address before you finish this SME expectations conversation is, you want to make sure that it is crystal clear specifically, what more are you willing to do to improve the value that ideal clients are receiving currently from you? And this is their turn to talk. You shut up, you listen to them. It's really their job to answer this question. It's not your job to come up with ideas. You can react, you can respond to their questions. The point is, this SME expectations conversation is about you holding them accountable to your expectations. And after you bring the issue onto the table, it's really up to them. I mean, the reason they've been hired and the reason they've been brought on to the team is because they're the ones that have the answers to all these questions. So, you know, ask them what specifically more they plan to do to improve value to clients, then let them talk. Don't, you know, listen to the recording. Make sure they're doing all the talking. And you're simply the accountability coach. That's your role at this part of the conversation. You're assessing, do they know what they're doing? Are they living up to my expectations of them when I brought them onto the team? Do they really know? Are they really skilled at this, or are they all talk? I mean, this is what you're really sitting down every 4 months and assessing. So you're the accountability coach, holding them accountable to the expectations that you had in your mind when you brought them on board. You're simply using the key performance measures as a way to measure those intangibles of what was in your head, of what you expected up front when you brought them on. So, and you know, if they try to deflect, which sometimes I've done this quite a bit. So if they try to say, hey, your clients are already getting everything that I'm willing to give for what you're paying me, you know, explain that, you know, this is not going away. You're going to keep asking them what more they are willing and able to do to improve value to clients until the client says that this subject matter expert is valuable to them, or the client. It's really the client that's the one who's going to be impressed. And we know that the referral rate across your entire ideal client community, the rate of referrals received, is the best measure. And you'll see that start going up. Not every client refers more, but across the entire community, you will see the rate of referrals increase. That's referrals per year. When I say rate, how many referrals per client per year? So that's the rate. And that number will increase across your client base. And you just explain to the subject matter expert, they can get out of their head this whole thing. You know, that's not an argument that's worthwhile. It's not an argument that has any currency in this meeting, you know, that you're getting what you're paying for currently. I'm trying to assess whether you can impress a client or not. And I'm telling you, we're not there yet. The client is not sufficiently impressed across all the clients. You know, if the clients were impressed with you, I'd be seeing the referral rate increase. So the clients are not impressed. I'm asking you a simple question. What are you going to be doing to improve the value to the clients? And I'm telling you, that's going to continue to be the issue on the table until the client referral rates increase. And until I start meeting, until my calendar is filled with potential clients that are introduced to us by clients that you're serving at a very high level, until the clients are impressed with you to that extent, I'm not going to stop asking this question. So the second question, that the bottom line question before wrapping up the meeting, is specifically, what are you going to be doing over the next 4 months to increase the percentage of ideal clients who consider this team to be indispensable? So that is the specific measurable that we are improving upon, and you have to have a method of measuring that. So we have the advisor value score, and we've talked about that a number of times in these sessions. It's one of the monthly projects. My point is, you know, you need to ask every subject matter, every ideal client, to what extent they consider you indispensable. Is our team indispensable to you? Yes or no? It's a simple question, and your clients are typically very comfortable answering the question. So you want that to be 100%. So what specifically is this individual on your team going to be doing over the next 4 months to increase that percentage? So just to wrap up, to finish this whole thing out, make sure after the subject matter expert expectations conversation, you create an interaction log for this meeting. So in the file for this subject matter expert should not only be the recording from every one of these that you've conducted with them, but every time you have an SME expectations conversation, there should be an interaction log documenting in writing everything that was discussed and promised to be done. It serves several purposes, creating this interaction log. Other than you should always have an interaction log for any interaction between team members, this being no different. But, you know, this offers the opportunity for you to ask your administrative manager to actually listen to the recording of the meeting and to create the interaction log. So this allows your administrative manager to listen to what was said and what was expected and what was agreed upon. It allows them to absorb all that discussion. And that's important, in my opinion, because usually, certainly on our team, the administrative manager works more closely with the subject matter experts than you do. So they need to know what they're looking for. You know, what is actually expected of this subject matter expert? The administrative manager has a right to know, because they work more closely than you do, and they can help you prepare for the next SME expectations conversation by documenting everything in the subject matter expert's file. Every time a subject matter expert does something extraordinary, the administrative manager should document it so that in the file you know everything that's praiseworthy that you can bring up at the next SME expectations conversation. Likewise, the administrative manager should be documenting performance that needs improvement every time they're late to a meeting, anytime they miss a deadline, anything that goes wrong, anytime a client's upset due to the work that that subject matter expert's performing, whatever. All these things should be documented in the file, good and bad. And look, I can tell you over time, at the beginning, there's usually some things to improve, but, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in, it's usually just a solid list of spectacular, extraordinary, praiseworthy accomplishments. I mean, after a while, the team dials into what's expected, and you know, they were invited to the team because they're so good, and they tend to step up. So all I'm saying is the interaction log is going to streamline your preparation next time around. Next time you sit down to prepare for an SME expectations conversation 4 months from now with this same SME, this interaction log is going to help you save time in preparing for that. Finally, make sure that you get 3 SME expectations calendars on your calendar at all times. So, like right now, make sure that there are 3 of these 60-minute SME expectations conversations one-on-one with each SME on your calendar this week. Get it on the calendar. And just add it to your routine. Every time you sit down to prepare for one of these SME expectations conversations, just add a little note to your checklist to look on your calendar and make sure that there are 3 SME expectations conversations on the calendar for every SME. Just spot check it to back up your administrative manager. Make sure that these are being scheduled, and take accountability for yourself, because I'm telling you, these SME expectations conversations are the small levers that move the big object. What's the big object? It's taking a raw material, which is a subject matter expert who's already extraordinary, somebody who's skilled at their narrow field of finance. And I can tell you from experience that what these regular SME expectations conversations do is they help raise the level of an already high-level subject matter expert, but mainly to get them to function more in an area that they're unfamiliar, which is as a team, good team member. In other words, how to, it's basically interacting with them regularly to help them see how they can better interact and function more effectively with the others on the team. And with that, you're going to have not only an extraordinary team, but a team that is delivering far above your clients' expectations in a way that's indispensable to your clients, and in a way that ultimately, over time, your clients will take over all your marketing activities so that they will make sure that you're introduced to more potential clients than you can possibly meet with in the course of a month. Well, that's it for the January edition. Happy New Year of the Advisor Pack Monthly Session. As always, we wish you all the best in implementing. And until next month, I'm Mark Little.